I think everyone here can imagine trying to get a group of people to do anything. For argument's sake, let's just talk today about one situation. It can really be getting anyone to do anything. But think about trying to get a group of people to leave the house. So what does it involve? First, you have to pack up everything. And there's all the technicalities, what you need for your trip, where you're going, the planning. But that's not what I'm talking about. It is the literal getting people to stop what they're doing and move. That shouldn't be so complicated. All you should say is, okay, it's time to leave. Sometimes you say that and you think that like maybe you said it in Chinese, maybe you said it in another language that nobody understands because nobody does anything. So you're standing there and you're going, okay, everyone, it's time to leave. You either get blank stares or no stares at all. So when it came to getting the Jews to move in the desert, one could understand that this was an incredible undertaking, that this was not me trying to get my little family out of the house. This was an entire nation having to uproot itself and travel through the desert where nobody wanted to be. Nobody wanted to be in the desert. It's much more comfortable to be parked where you are. So just imagine what would have been needed for Moshe Rabbeinu on his own to move the Jewish people. Now, Baruch Hashem for Moshe, he was not left to his own volition in this matter. That the Psukim in this week's Parsha tell us how Hashem got the entire nation to move. Now, if only there was something that I could ask from Hashem, it wouldn't be such a big deal. It's just that Hashem could help me do this every time we need to leave the house. That what would happen? We see in Bamidbar Perek Yud, Lamed Hei through Lamed Vav, Vayihi bin Soha Ha'aron, Vayomer Moshe, Kuma Hashem Vayafutzu Aivacha, Vianusu Misanecha Mipanecha. So what would happen when the ark was ready to set out? So when the Aron was going to move, the ark was going to set out, Moshe would say, Kuma Hashem. So we would say, get up Hashem, we're going to go. May your enemies be scattered. May Hashem like clear the way for us that there won't be enemies. And may your foes flee before you. May everyone flee from in front of us. Uvenuchol Yomar. And when they were going to camp again, what happened? Shuva Hashem Rivavos Alfa Yisrael. So it would say, return Hashem, thou who is the God of all of Israel. So we had this thing that the ark would go and we would travel and Moshe would say something and we would all go. And then when we wanted to rest, Moshe would say something else and we would settle. Seems much simpler than getting my family out of the house on a Sunday morning. But what's interesting is not necessarily the procedure that happened here, though that might be interesting to some people, which is how you got a nation of this many people to move so easily. But the question that we're going to ask here is about something very subtle that we see if we look at the words. Now, anyone who's looking on the source sheet sees that after it says Lamed Hei, and before it has the pay in parentheses at the end of these two psukim, there is something very strange. And that is that there are two nuns, the letter nun. However, they are not part of the pasuk. It's not a letter that I skipped. Rather, they seem to be some sort of punctuation. That there are these two nuns, but not only are they nuns, but they're nuns that are facing backwards. So these are known as the inverted nuns. One is at the beginning of pasuk lamed hey, one is at the beginning of pasuk lamed vav, and these seem to be there as some sort of punctuation, some sort of sign. They definitely seem to be intentionally placed there. So the question that I want to ask today is, what is the purpose of these inverted nuns? Whenever we have something strange in the psukim, like dots on top of a letter that is a different size from the rest of the font, we are called upon to ask the question of what is the purpose of the presence of these symbols in the pasuk. That we know that the Torah is not something that has a typo. The Torah is not a place where we find anything extraneous. There's no extra dots. There's no extra changes. Everything is exactly the way that it is meant to be. So what is the purpose? This is a very random topic. It's right in the middle of a parsha that's talking about many other things. And all of a sudden, we have this topic of Vayihi ben Soha Aharon, that when the Aharon is going to travel, what do we do? This isn't exactly what we had been talking about until now. So we have this seemingly random set of psukim that's surrounded by these strange markers that are out of the ordinary. And we are going to ask the question today of what is the purpose of these backwards nuns? What purpose do they serve here? Do they have to do with the randomness of the pasuk? Do they have to do with the context? What can we learn from them? So the Gemara on Shabbos brings up the first approach, which is sort of a two-part first approach, but this is 3D Parsha, not 4D Parsha. So we're going to look at them as part of the same idea, but they do have subtle nuanced differences between them. So first, we're going to start with the Gemara and Shabbos. The Gemara and Shabbos on Kuf Tet Zayin, Amud Aleph. She'en zeh mikoma. This is not the place for these psukim. What does this mean? Rebbe Omer. So Rebbe tells us, lo min Hashem huzeh, that it was not from Hashem the placement of these psukim. Ella, mipnesha sefer chashuv hu bifnei atzmo. Rather, we are meant to understand that this is an important sefer in and of itself. What does that mean? Kimana zala hada amar Rabbi Shmuel bar Nachman amar Rabbi Yochanan. Chatzva amudeha shiva. What are they talking about? They're saying that this is a special sefer in and of itself. What does that mean? It's its own sefer. Another pasuk tells us, Chatzva amudeha shiva, that the world stands on seven. What does that mean? Elu shiva sifri Torah. This is the seven books of the Torah. Of course, the world stands on seven things. That's the seven books of the Torah. But now you have to stop here and say, what do you mean seven books of the Torah? We all know there's five books of the Torah. Remember, who knows five? I know five. Five are the books of the Torah. There are not seven books of the Torah. So what are we talking about here? Kiman ki Rebbe, man tana defali galer de Rebbe. What is this talking about? Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel who? Who contradicts Rebbe? Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel, detana. Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel omer, atida parsha zu she'te'aker mikan, v'techatev b'mekoma. So the first approach that we have that we said is that these psukim are a book in and of itself, which leads us to having seven books of the Torah, that there is Bereishis, Shemos, Vayikra, Bamidbar until these psukim, Bamidbar post these psukim. There are seven books of the Torah. Did we get to seven there?
Devarim.
Yes. Yeah. Sorry. Devarim after these psukim. Sorry, Bamidbar after these psukim and then Sefer Devarim. So we have seven books of the Torah. But now the Gemara is continuing on and saying, like, but wait, so what are we talking about that this isn't in its place? So we have two opinions. One is that this is a sefer in and of itself, and that's why this isn't really like the specific place for it. Rather, it is a book in and of itself. However, Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel says differently. He says this is not its place, meaning atida parsha zu she'te'aker mikan v'techatev b'mekoma. In the future, this book will be uprooted from this spot and will be put into its place. V'lama katvakan. So why is it written here? Kidei lahafsik bein peranos rishona leperanos shnia. Because it comes between two negative accounts of actions of Bnei Yisrael. Peranos shnia maihi. What was the second negative action? V'yihi ha'am kimis onanim. That we have the parsha of the slav that comes after this, that the nation is complaining that they have no meat. So that is what comes after this. But what is the first negative thing that happens? Per Anas Rishona, Vis'u mihar Hashem. That they are ready, they leave too quickly from Har Hashem. That they get up and they're like in a rush to leave Har Hashem. Va'amar Rabbi Chama bar Rav Chanina, Shesaru me'acharei Hashem. That they left from after Hashem. Heichan mekoma, Amar Rav Ashi, b'digalim. So when should this really have been written and when will it in the future be placed? When it talks in the beginning of Sefer Bamidbar about the Degalim, how Bnei Yisrael camped, it would make a lot more sense there, that that's how they camped, and this is how they should travel. So this Gemara gives us two ideas that are really important to our first approach. Our first approach, what is the purpose of these backwards nuns? It's to differentiate these psukim. The Gemara goes as far as to say that these backwards nuns, these backwards nuns act to make these psukim a sefer in and of themselves. That we would go as far as to say that the Torah, there are seven books of the Torah, that this becomes a sefer in and of itself, dividing Sefer Bamidbar into three separate svarim. But the Gemara continued on and told us, but what's going on? Why is it a separate book? Because it's not really supposed to be written here. Really, in the future, it's going to be picked up from the place where it is right now. And it's going to be put into where it's meant to be, which is by the Degelim, that when we learn how Bnei Israel camp, that's where we should learn how they travel as well. So why was it placed here? It's not only a separate book. Okay, we know it's a separate book. We know it's put into a different place than it should be. But why is it put into that place? Because we want to separate between two negative stories. That there's the negative story of Bnei Israel traveling away from Har Hashem, that they ran away from Hashem. And then there is the second negative account of where they Avayhi Ha'am Kimisonanim, that Bnei Israel began to complain. And therefore, we want to separate between these two stories. So we placed it right here. That what is the purpose of the backwards nuns according to the first approach? According to the first approach, the backwards nuns are to act as parentheses, that they are meant to show a distinction between the psukim before and the psukim after. And these psukim within the two backwards nuns are meant to be an entity in and of themselves. So that is approach number one, that the backwards nuns serve as a differentiating factor, that they separate the other psukim from the psukim that are within the backwards nuns. But why backwards nuns? Like, we could have just used parentheses. Like, I don't know. We could have used any letter. Is there a specific reason that we use the nuns? That we'll get to in a little bit. But second approach, why do we have the inverted nuns? So Rashi on Mishlei tells us, Chatzvei Amudah HaShiva. This is the pasuk that the Gemara quoted, Chatzva Amudah HaShiva, that the world stands on seven. Shivas Yemei Bereshis, that these are the 7 days of Bereshis. Davar Acher, Zayin Sfarim Shigish Batorah, Vayhi Ben Soharon, Sefer La'atzmo B'Masech HaShabbos. So he says that the psukim of Vayhi Ben Soah Ha'aron are their own sefer. That's an idea that we discussed. So now, we are still on, these are just the ideas that explain the ideas that we went through on the first approach. Sorry, I got a little out of order. So Rashi tells us that the world stands on seven books, and we talked about this, and the ideas come from the Sifre. Vayhi Ben Soharon Nakud Alav Milamala V'Milamata Mipnesha Lo Hayaze Mikomo. That the Sifre is explaining the Gemara that says that this is not the proper place for the Psukim. So we went through all of this. So now on to approach number two. What is the purpose of the backwards nuns if we're not saying that it's just to separate it out as a separate book, and then if we're not saying that the purpose is to act as sort of parentheses? So then what is the purpose of the backwards nuns? So if we look in the Zohar on Bahaloscha Yotet tells us, Tachaze Arona Hava Natal Kimehu Oreach Tlata Yomin. Go and see how the Aron would travel a distance of 3 days in front of them. That when they would travel, the Aron would be 3 days ahead of the nation. Nilahavi mitparish mine v'natil amei. The Shechina, which is symbolized by the nuns, would not separate herself from it. Okay, so remember, we're reading pieces in the Zohar, so it will all come together at the end, but we have to be thinking Kabbalistically until then. V'migo rachmehu d'lehon d'Yisrael, and because of his love for Yisrael, the nun turns its face and turns back to the Aron. Ahadara nufehu v'estacher miligabe Arona, gehai iolad az lata, kad ihu azil, ahada afuye la'atar nafik. Similar to the young deer that keeps turning her face back to the place she left when she goes forth. Therefore, when the Aron would set out, the nun turned to face toward the children of Israel and the shoulders of her body towards the ark. What is the Zohar talking about here? The Zohar is saying that the nuns are not meant to act as grammatical symbols. They're not here to act as parentheses. Rather, they are giving us a visualization of what it would look like when Bnei Yisrael traveled. That the Aron would travel before Bnei Yisrael. And what is with the Aron? The Shechina. The Shechina rests on the Aron. So what would happen? The Shechina, kiviyachol, would be turning its neck. And again, remember, this is all anthropomorphic, but this is meant for our visualization and our understanding of the relationship between us and Hashem. that Hashem would kiviyachol turn his head back, the Shechina would turn backwards to keep the eye on B'nai Yisrael. And the nun at the end represents B'nai Yisrael that keep their eyes focused, even though the Aron was so far ahead of them, it was 3 days ahead of them, they would constantly be focused on where they were going, what they were connecting to. A toddler goes through a stage like this, that they say the toddlers go through different stages when they're learning to walk. That at a certain point, it's called tethering, where they're going off ahead, but they're constantly turning their heads back to their parent to make sure that their parent is still there. And that is the imagery that the Zohar is trying to create with the understanding of these backwards nuns. That the Zohar is telling us that these nuns are meant to be sort of illustrations within the Torah that show us that when B'nai Yisrael were traveling, the Shechina was glancing back towards them and they were looking forward towards Hashem. That it was nothing in the Torah is just meant to tell us a slight technicality. Everything has a deeper meaning. So if we're looking at the way B'nai Yisrael traveled, we see that what Moshe says is not, come on, Israel, we're going. It's Moshe's referencing Hashem, that the Aron is at the front, and that is the focus, that we are following Hashem. This is the ultimate test of our emunah bitachon. We don't know where we're going. We don't know what we're supposed to do. When Hashem says travel, we travel. When Hashem says rest, we rest. And the backwards nuns serve to add into this imagery, that they are meant to remind us that just like the nun is turned backwards, the Shechina did not just focus ahead. The Shechina was focused on B'nai Yisrael that was behind them. It's like a toddler that's tethered to their parent. Now there's this constant connection of looking backwards and making sure that one is connected to the other. And for the Jewish people, even though it wasn't always so clear to them that the Aron was sometimes so far ahead of them, there was this idea that their necks were craned towards the Aron, towards the Shechina. That there's this connection that was created while they were traveling in the desert, which can be envisioned through looking at these backwards nuns. So approach number one is that the backwards nuns serve as parentheses to separate off these psukim from their context, whether it is to designate it out as a sefer bifnei atzmo, as a book in and of itself, or whether it's not only a book in and of itself, but it's meant to separate it from the context around it, that it is meant to be a break between the piece that comes before and the piece that comes after. That was our first approach. And according to our second approach, it was that these backwards nuns are not meant to serve as punctuation. Rather, these backwards nuns are meant to serve as an image, that they're meant to show us what the connection between Hashem and B'nai Yisrael was like as they were traveling through the desert. That Hashem, the Shechina, was constantly focused backwards on B'nai Yisrael, and B'nai Yisrael were constantly focused forwards on Hashem, who was leading them. So that is approach number two. And now for approach number three, I want to go to a piece by Rabbi Dr. Norman Lam. Rabbi Lam was an extremely elegant orator. He was more clear and had such beautiful language, much better than I could ever come up with. So I am going to read the piece from the Drasha by Rabbi Lam, but I'll stop and explain as we go along through. So this is Rabbi Lam's Drasha. It's called Upstream, and it is in his, I can show you the book. It is called Drashot LeDorot. These are the compilation of Rabbi Lam's Drashot. And this is his Drasha on Parshas Ba'alosa. It was given on June 4th, 1966. So a little while ago. I've spoken several times in the last few weeks on what I consider to be the philosophy of modern orthodoxy. Now we're like, okay, these backwards nuns went from like some small little parentheses to like the epitome of modern orthodox theology. But just hold on. It's a really fascinating piece. A total commitment to the halacha while living in this world and participating in it fully, culturally, economically, and politically. We spoke critically, even if warmly and lovingly, of a new tendency noticeable in orthodoxy in recent years to recoil, to recede from the larger community and ignore all those whose interests do not coincide with ours. Our thesis was that this withdrawal from the world, this refusal to confront contemporary life, is not a viable philosophy for Orthodox Judaism in our times. I believe that this is a theme that needs constant reiteration, continuous consideration, and deep reflection. Today, however, I wish to emphasize the other side of the coin. The caution that we must exercise never to lose ourselves in the world, not to be overly impressed with the great culture in which we live. This point is made with a consummate skill in a comment by the Kabbalistic Midrash HaNe'elam on a famous passage in today's Sidra, which we will all recognize from our prayer book, Vayihi ben Soa Ha'arun, and it was when the Ark set out, that Moses offered up a brief prayer asking God to rise or reveal himself and that his enemies shall scatter from before him. Those who paid careful attention to the Torah reading this morning will have noticed that this brief passage of two verses is surrounded on either side by a special mark, the inverted Hebrew letter Nun. These two Nunin Hafuchin, inverted Nuns, are part of our Masoretic tradition. What do these strange symbols, which appear nowhere else in the Torah, mean? The author of the Midrash HaNe'elam spares no words in describing their enormous significance. They are, we are told, the very glory of God and the foundation of the world. It is because of this that Jacob blessed his children with them. What does this mean? For one, Jacob's chief blessing of his grandchildren was v'yidgu l'ruv, let them be plentiful. As we say in Hamalach HaGoloti, that Yaakov blessed Menashe and Ephraim, v'yidgu l'ruv b'kerev ha'aretz. What does this have to do with the letter Nun? The word yidgu, is derived from the Hebrew word dag, for fish, that Yaakov is blessing his grandchildren, v'yidgu l'ruv, that you should be plentiful, you should be fruitful, you should multiply. Another word in Hebrew and Aramaic for fish is nun. Thus the Targum reads, for the blessing we just mentioned, let them be plentiful as fish of the sea. So the letter nun is also interchangeable with the word dag, for fish. So we're now talking about nun as meaning fish, that these are not just something that was chosen to be inserted in the psukim, that it could have been a tzadi, or it could have been a kaf, or it could have been anything that sort of has that curved shape that could serve as parentheses. Rather, Rabbi Lam is saying that nun was very specifically selected because nun also means fish. So what does fish have to do anything with these psukim? Furthermore, the Midrash HaNe'elam continues, the Almighty excluded idol worshippers from the fraternity of these two nuns, and that is why the pagans always bear enmity towards Israel. And finally, the Almighty will redeem Israel and bring the Messiah by virtue of these two nuns. So this is all what's written in the Midrash HaNe'elam, that these two nuns are that Hashem will redeem Israel through these two nuns, that these are the essence of God. He attributes so much importance to these two nuns. What is so important of them? Thus, in secret extravagance, holy hyperbole, and marvelous mystery, the rabbis offer us not a mere play on words to delight our literary sense, but exciting spiritual insights that go to the heart of our problem. For what they mean is that the letter nun means fish, and therefore the inverted letters, the nun and hafuchin, symbolize fish that are willing to swim upstream, against the tide, against the currents and tendencies of their surroundings. It is this remarkable quality which characterizes the true Jew and distinguishes him or her from the pagan. The authentic Jew must be able to dissent, to keep apart, to be unpopular if necessary, to oppose the time, to swim upstream. An individual who cannot swim upstream cannot affirm his own independent judgment against the mob. That person neither respects nor loves himself, and one who does not love himself cannot love others. And our Torah commanded us, love thy neighbor as thyself, not hate thy neighbor as thyself. So Rabbi Lam is coming out very strongly and saying, let's follow all the pieces here. Why the nun and hafuchin? And specifically, he adds on to his question and says, the Midrash HaNe'elam speaks so highly about these two nuns, says that these are the essence of the power of God itself, that B'nai Yisrael will be redeemed through these two nuns. What is so special about these two nuns? So he says, why is the letter nun chosen? Because nun means fish. So what does fish have to do with anything? And why is it spoken about so greatly? And what Rabbi Lam says is that these nun and hafuchim represent fish that are willing to swim upstream, that are willing to be countercultural, that are willing to embrace this idea of God being the one that leads us, that God goes in front of us, that when God says travel, we travel. When God says camp, we camp. When God says, think this way, we think this way. When God says, act this way, we act this way. The Rabbi Lam says that sometimes when God is our guide, we are forced to be countercultural. And he says the Nun and Hafuchen are meant to remind us of this. And this is why the Midrash Hanalam speaks so highly of these two nuns. He says, this is the essence of God itself. This is the mechanism through which we will be redeemed. That when we are willing to put our belief in God before all else, when we are willing to follow Hashem at all costs, that is when we are going to be redeemed. The upstream tradition of Judaism means that we must dare to be different. It means that when religious observance is frowned upon, we must frown right back and follow the dictates of our conscience and the teachings of halacha. It means that when religion is popular, but for the wrong reasons, such as social and ascetic reasons, we must not hesitate to say so openly and urge people to practice their religion for the proper motives. When others, for instance, consider it good style to indulge in uninhibited and unrestrained lavishness, whether in the pagan extravagance of the funeral or the vulgar exhibitionism of the gala bar mitzvah, we must not fear to affirm our upstream mentality, to assert the delicacy of Judaism's democratic traditions, its insistence upon simplicity, and the emphasis upon the spiritual and the religious. Whenever we find society in violation of the sacred ideals of Judaism, we must become the nunim hafuchim, those who are willing to go upstream and not downstream. We must do so even if we are exonerated and even if the pages bear enmity because of it. The upstream tradition of Judaism also means to dare to be alone. The very heavy emphasis of the Midrash on the theological significance of the nunim, that they represent the very glory of God and the foundation of the world, shows the true religious distinction comes not when it is easy to be religious, but when one's loyalty is tested in the crucible of heroism. That is why profound religious thinkers and philosophers, from Professor Whitehead to Rabbi Joseph B. Soloveitchik, speak so often and so broodingly of loneliness as a major component of the religious thought and experience. To be different, to go against the tide, often leaves people with a feeling of aloneness. But that is what makes mankind worthy and life worthwhile. Rabbi Shalom Rosner connected this idea to the idea of who Moshe was as well. That Moshe is named Moshe ki min hamayim mishitihu, that he was pulled out of the water. That what does water do? Not just fish. Fish swim along with the tide. But what does water do? Water shapes to whatever vessel it is in. To whatever comes in its way, water just conforms. So Moshe was min hamayim mishitihu. Moshe was pulled out of the water. That Moshe had to have that courage. That in a world where Paro was the ruler, he had to go to Paro and he had to say, there's a God. There's someone higher than you. And I'm here to represent that God. Moshe had to be willing to be this symbol of counterculturalism. That he had to be willing to go upstream to eventually lead a nation that was going to need this trait as well. That Rabbi Lam's point is these nunin hafuchim are not just there to provide us with punctuation and a separation between topics. Rather, these nunin hafuchim are essential to the understanding of the text. That when we follow God, it's not just when it's easy. It's not just when it's so clear in front of us that Hashem is literally picking up the Aron and saying, travel this direction. It's also when we're forced to swim upstream. When it's counter to what everyone around us is doing. And these nunin hafuchim show us that they are backwards. They are going against the stream. These are the fish that are going the opposite direction. And it is meant to inspire us and remind us that that is who we have to be as well. So to recap our three ideas, our first idea, why the nunin hafuchim, they serve as parentheses to separate this paragraph out as a sefer bifnei atzmo. They are meant to put a distinction between two negative stories of Bnei Yisrael, that we don't want to go from negative to negative, and therefore we separate out these psukim, we put them here, even though this is not where they make the most sense. Approach number two was that the nunim hafuchim show our relationship between Hashem and Bnei Yisrael when they were traveling in the desert. That these are not just technical psukim that tell us the protocol for traveling, but rather they show us that when we were traveling, Hashem was focused backwards on Bnei Yisrael, and we were focused forwards on following Hashem. So these backwards nuns illustrate for us that imagery and make it clear and vivid in front of us as we were reading the psukim about what happened. And lastly was our idea from Rabbi Lam, that the nunim hafuchim, that nun in Aramaic means fish. And these nunim hafuchim, these backwards fish, represent fish swimming upstream. That when it comes to following Hashem, often what is prescribed for us is not popular. It is not the way that the rest of society is traveling. But when we know that we are following Hashem, often we are asked to be those fish that are swimming upstream. We are asked to be countercultural. We are asked to represent different values from what the rest of society values. And Rabbi Lam says that is why the Midrash attributes so much importance to these backwards nuns, because they serve as a method for reminding us about what our purpose is as Am Hashem, as the nation that is willing to go against the current. So with these three understandings, I think that when we arrive at these backwards nuns, when we're reading through the Parsha this week, we will see not only another form of punctuation or trop that perhaps we don't understand, but instead we will see two small little characters that are infused with so much meaning.